Okay, so a little research for you. 60 Minutes and Vanity Fair. By the way, Vanity Fair, how appropriate. We'd be talking about greed and stuff, and it starts with vanity. Career choices. Here was the question. Which of these professions is the greediest? I know that you were wanting to know the answer to that question, so I'm going to start there. 1 in 4 Americans associate lobbyists with greed, followed by lawyers. So lobbyists are at 26%, lawyers are at 22%. I'm just reporting the facts, okay? Hollywood, does this stun you? Comes in at a whopping 21%, bankers at 15%, and then the paparazzi, you knew they had to show up at some point, right? The paparazzi came in at 9%. 8 out of 10 Americans feel that politicians are mostly driven by greed. 8 out of 10. Now, in an unscientific poll, just of everybody that's here this morning, how many of you would agree with that? 8 out of 10. How many of you would say, not with the poll, but how many of you would say that politicians are mostly driven by greed? Can I see a show of your hands, please? All right. Now, some of you seem to be a little bit more believers in them. But that's positive. It's good. 17% say that they're mostly driven by good, and they have their constituents' best interests in mind. That's pretty overwhelming. How about this? Selfishness versus selflessness. Americans are evenly divided on this one, with half thinking that someone who is greedy is more likely to be successful. That sounds like Gordon Gekko in the clip from Wall Street, doesn't it? Versus 46% who chose someone who is selfless as the most likely to find success. You know what's probably looking for a definition there? How do we define success, right? But fair enough. I'm just reporting the facts. So Gordon Gekko, my friend, cool name, by the way, Gordon Gekko, right? But what about what he said there? Greed is good, right? Actually, 78% of Americans disagreed with Gordon Gekko on that. For those of you that are writing that down, 78%, 19% actually agree with him. We need to find out who those people are. Now, when the movie Wall Street came out in 1987, people were fascinated by the lavish lifestyle of the Wall Street winners, they were calling them. You flash forward to 2008 and the financial carnage that America experienced, and it's not surprising that nearly 8 out of 10 Americans disagreed with him. So once you have a financial collapse and everybody's looking at Wall Street, everybody goes, I think I'm going to disagree with Gordon Gekko at least now. But when everything was good, sounded pretty good. How about movie characters? Who are the greediest movie characters of all time? You can discuss this at lunch, but I'm going to tell you what the studies say, and then you feel free to agree or disagree. 31% of those polled picked Jordan Belfort, who is the Wolf of Wall Street, as the greediest movie character, followed by Ebenezer Scrooge at 20%, yeah, Cruella de Vil at 19%, 101 Dalmatians, everybody. She was also a horrible driver. My guy, the Grinch, came in fourth, and I was a little offended for him because his heart grew 3 sizes that day. And I was like, tell the rest of it, whatever. But apparently he's a greedy guy. And who came in fifth? Richie Rich. And I was like, they're going, all right, people. The guy's name tells you there's a problem there. And only that percentage, 6%, is saying Richie Rich. Okay, movie characters. You could probably come up with some others. I want to get Scientific American on you here for a second, because there's some studies that have been done. Who is more likely to lie, cheat, or steal? Or steal. I can tell you who it's not. People that went to Texas A&M. Because we have a motto. Aggies do not lie, cheat, or steal, nor do we tolerate those who do. But back to the article. Who is more likely to lie, cheat, or steal? The poor person or the rich person? Now, I'm just doing the study. Y'all just pay attention. It's tempting to think that the wealthier you are, the more likely you are to act fairly. After all, if you already have enough for yourself, it's easier to think about what others might need. But research suggests the opposite is actually what's true. As people climb the social ladder, their compassionate feelings toward other people actually drop. Let me unpack this for you here for just a second. At Berkeley in California, psychologist Paul Piff, great name, Paul Piff and Dr. Keltner, they ran several studies looking at whether social class, as measured by wealth, occupational prestige, and education, influences how much we care about the feelings of other people. In one study, Piff and his colleagues observed the behavior of drivers. You're going to like this one. Drivers at a busy four-way intersection. Now, I'm just going to stop here for a second and just think, has this happened to me even this week, right? Here's what they found. They found that luxury car drivers were more likely to cut off other motorists instead of waiting for their turn at the intersection. Unscientific poll, class. How many of you had that happen to you this week? Can I see your hands? Luxury car. All right, here's the cool thing. Happened to me yesterday. And sitting at an intersection that will remain nameless, but I'm sitting there. My light turns green. It's a full probably 2 seconds, which the guy behind me should have probably been honking at that point, because if I don't absolutely punch it and go 100 miles an hour within 10 feet immediately of the light turning green, then I'm wasting everybody's time. That actually didn't happen yesterday, but I'm sitting at a green the light turns green, and I'm sitting there for a second, and this Porsche goes right in front like that. Now, had I actually gone out, we would have had a problem, right? But they were in an area they shouldn't have been driving that fast, and they blew through a red light. And you know what I thought? I'm talking about that tomorrow. Now, here was the thing. This was true for both men and women. So you're sitting there going, I bet it's the guys, isn't it? Nope. It was the guys and the ladies. Regardless of the time of day or the amount of traffic at the intersection, it could be no cars. It could be packed with cars. They just felt like they were entitled to go whenever they wanted to go. In a different study, they found that luxury car drivers, all of you are going to leave and be like, I'm selling my luxury car. In a different study, they found that luxury car drivers were also more likely to speed past pedestrians trying to use a crosswalk. Here's the thing, even after making eye contact with them, it wasn't just that they see somebody kind of crossing, they're looking at them and still flying right through. They don't care. They don't care. In order to figure out whether selfishness or greed leads to wealth, and this is, you kind of pull those things apart. Greed and selfishness aren't identical, but they are first cousins. In order to figure out whether greed or selfishness leads to wealth, that's the Gordon Gekko quote, rather than the other way around, Piff and his colleagues ran a study where they manipulated people's class feelings. Now they're just tinkering with people. The researchers asked participants to spend a few minutes comparing themselves either to people better off or worse off than themselves financially. And afterwards, participants were shown a jar of candy and told that they could take home as much as they wanted. They were also told that the leftover candy would be given to children. All right, now think about that, because I have this picture of like Tiny Tim over there. You know, I'm ever so hungry. Now, what happened? The participants who had spent time thinking about how much better off they were, then compared to others, ended up taking significantly more candy for themselves, even though they knew that it was leaving less behind for the children. They didn't care about the kids. That's bad. That's bad. A related set of studies published by Keltner, who was the other guy, Piff and Keltner, last year looked at how social class influences feelings of compassion toward people that are suffering. In one study, they found that less affluent individuals are more likely to report feelings of compassion toward other people that are really hurting. For example, they're more likely to agree with statements such as, I often notice people who need help. Who's more likely to even see the need? And the answer isn't the wealthy. It's those that are a little less well off. Or even this quote, it's important to take care of people who are vulnerable. The wealthy tended to not agree with that as much as the poor. And here's the thing, this was even true after controlling for other factors like gender or ethnicity. It didn't matter. You could be white, you could be black, you could be Hispanic, you could be male, you could be female, it didn't matter. Even spiritual beliefs. Are you Christian? Are you not? Are you what? It didn't matter. And in a second study, participants were asked to watch two videos while having their heart rate monitored as they watched it. One video showed somebody explaining how to build a patio. The other showed children who were suffering from cancer. And after watching the videos, participants indicated how much compassion they felt while watching either video. Here's the thing. Social class was measured by asking participants questions about their family's level of income and education. And the results of the study showed that participants on the lower end of the spectrum, that is with less income and with less education, were more likely to report feelings of compassion while watching the child suffer with cancer. In addition, because I said they were checking their heart rates, their heart rates slowed down while watching the children suffer with cancer. And this is why it's important for the study. That's a physiological response that's associated with paying greater attention to the feelings and the motivations of other people. Isn't that interesting? So what these findings do is they build on other research showing how upper-class individuals tend to be worse at recognizing the emotions of others and less likely to pay attention to people that they're interacting with. Let me give you one example. For example, by checking their cell phones while they're interacting with people, or just doodling while they're interacting with other people, making just eye contact, like a personal connection with people, it lessens. But why would wealth and status decrease our feelings of compassion for other people? I mean, after all, it seems more likely that those that have few resources, if you think about it, would lead maybe to selfishness. They realize everything they don't have, and they become selfish about it. Here's what the Piff and his colleagues said. They suspect that the answer to this question, the answer may have something to do with how wealth and abundance give us a sense of freedom and independence from other people. I don't need you. The less we have to rely on others, the less I have to worry about their feelings. And so I just don't care. And this leads us toward being more self-focused. Another reason has to do with our attitudes toward greed. Like Gordon Gekko, upper-class people may be more likely to endorse the idea that greed is good because it got them where they're at. And so functionally, there was a good benefit. So Piff and his colleagues found that wealthier people are more likely to agree with statements like greed is justified, greed is beneficial, greed is morally defensible. And these attitudes ended up predicting participants' likelihood of even engaging in unethical behavior because the ends justify the means. Interesting, isn't it? So as we've been doing this series on the seven deadly sins, here we are talking about greed. Greed can kill a number of things. By the way, the founder of Habitat for Humanity, at one point in his life, was an incredibly successful businessman, but he also was self-described as a miserable excuse of a human being. Until one day when he comes home and his wife has this conversation with him that says, "I can't take this anymore. I don't want to live with a man like you, and I'm leaving you. I'm divorcing you." Now, that's not the end of the story. It's just to say that everything in the story had led up to that moment. But it was that aha time where he realized that every choice that he was making was a choice for himself. But then he started to take a really hard look at himself, all the compromises that he had made, and the misery. Really, when he looked at it, he had a ton of stuff, but he was miserable. And guess what he does? "I'm going to do something else with my life." And that's how Habitat for Humanity began. All of those skills that he had, he decided to use for good. So I want to offer some perspective here. Did you know that America is the wealthiest country, arguably, in history? Did you know that? You are living in, right now, arguably the wealthiest country in history. But when a study was done, around 97% of Americans spend almost all of their money on themselves, day to day. But I also want to point something out. No sin is more frequently mentioned in the Bible than greed. None. It was the first sin, when you think about it, of Sodom and Gomorrah. They were greedy. But when you think about greed, as a definition, greed is a strong and selfish desire to have more of something, an inordinate desire to have more of something. Most often, this is money or power. So the old school word for greed is avarice. You've probably heard that, which comes from the Latin word that means craving. Have you ever gone to a restaurant? What else would you go to a restaurant for? Have you ever gone to a restaurant and eaten? No. All right, so you go to a restaurant, right? And you eat, and by the time you're done, you're like, I think I'm gonna die. Have you ever had that before? That moment, you know, it's, I'm not going to eat the rest of the day today, and tomorrow's not looking good either. Because you went to Poncho's or something. I don't know. That was me in college, because it was like $3 and the flag kept going up, right? Gluttony's next week, heads up. All right, so, you know, there you are, right? And I couldn't possibly eat anymore. And then you go home, and it's like 5 hours later, and then you do this. You know, what's in the pantry? You do that? All right. That's the idea of craving. Because what happens is, much like a stomach, when you pile something into it, whether it's healthy or not, you know, it expands the lining, which expands the capacity. It's no different with your soul. What you shove into it expands the lining of it or expands the capacity of it, and it stretches it out so that what was maybe there before that was satisfied just doesn't satisfy it anymore. And this is why you say, man, how much is enough? And the answer is a little bit more, a little bit more. When we get to that place, maybe we need to say, I need to seriously consider whether or not greed has just overtaken my life. Just like the sin of lust, greed craves something that isn't necessarily wrong in itself. We said this when we talked about lust. Listen, sex isn't wrong in itself. God created it. God created it. But it's when these things go way beyond the bounds of what God created it for, and they become a sorry substitute for our worship for Him. So it becomes the wrong thing. In this case, it's usually physical things. Greed craves these things excessively. Tim Keller wrote a book called Counterfeit Gods. And here's what he said. I thought it was so insightful. He said, as a pastor, I've had people come to me to confess that they struggle with almost every kind of sin. Almost. I cannot recall anyone ever coming to me and saying, I spend too much money on myself. I think my greedy lust for money is harming my family, my soul, and people around me. Greed's modus operandi includes blindness to your own heart. It's the one that nobody ever sees. Here's the thing. We tend to not compare ourselves to people in our class, but to those who have more than us. And that's what helps us get off the hook here. See, because there's always somebody with the bigger yacht. There's always somebody with the more expensive car. There's always somebody else. And I don't have that, and therefore I'm not greedy. It gives us a false sense of security in our belief that we're really not. And this is the problem with greed and its cousin selfishness that I mentioned before, is that it turns the gifts of God into a cesspool instead of a conduit for grace. I'm just going to keep this stuff, and I'm going to compile this stuff. It's almost like you think of the person that, you know, we become attached to these things. I was listening to somebody talk about this. They said, you ever buy a couch and you put it in the house, right? And then after a while, the couch is looking pretty raggedy, but there are all these memories that are connected to the couch, right? So that you don't want to get rid of it. Even though maybe getting rid of it, there's a family that could use this couch somewhere. It's still somewhat functional, but, you know, maybe it's had its day for you, right? But we can't do that. All these memories are connected to this thing. And so what this does is this becomes the things where we start to compile just a little bit more because we can't get rid of that. It just can't get out of the way. You probably know what I'm talking about. In spite of the fact, by the way, that other people are probably walking into your house and going, what is that doing in here? We might want to ask the same thing when it comes to our soul, though. Take a look at it and say, what is this doing in here? Here's the catch. And this is the problem with greed. These physical things, by the way, they are gifts from God. God created the world, and what did He say right off the bat? Enjoy this. Enjoy this. Enjoy the world. Enjoy your wife. Enjoy your family. Enjoy it. You can get this from James 1:17. These same physical gifts are to be enjoyed. They're also to be extended to others. And we need to look at 1 Timothy 6:18 to see that. Extend them to others. So here's the catch. Our definition of greed constantly changes with the desire of our heart. And when our desire for more money or possessions is enlarged, the standard of greed is enlarged as well. So our hearts define greed as more than what I have now or more than what I need for all of my wants. And so greed is either defined as too much money when you think about it, but that's never me. It's always the other person. I want to give you some observations this morning from the Word of God that I hope helps us out on how to identify this and then how to eradicate this. Because greed, like the other sins, I mean, we're doing the seven deadly sins. You know there's more than seven that are deadly, but we're only doing seven. Why is greed a sin? Let me give you a few reasons. Here's number one. Write this down for you note takers. Greed is a sin against yourself. It's a sin against yourself. It ruins you. It ruins you. A greedy person, by the way, is an unhappy person. They're never satisfied. They never have enough. They're unable to enjoy what they have, at least for very long. They always have to move on to the other thing. There was a philosopher named Schopenhauer. If you look at his picture sometime, he looks like Wolverine, for those of you that like comics. You know, his hair is kind of flies away and stuff. You know, but one of the things that he said, if you look at people and pay attention, you know, there is no meaning to life. And the reason that you know there's no meaning to life is because you're constantly pursuing stuff. Constantly. And then we finally get that relationship, or we get the money, or we get the job, or we get the, and you know what? After a little bit of time, it didn't satisfy us the way that we thought that it was going to. And so what do? We start going after the next thing. It's always about the pursuit. It's never about what we're blessed to just have. And that's why he goes, now by the way, didn't believe in God. But this is why he goes on to say this, and that's what proves to you that there is no meaning to life. I think what it proves to you is that we have a problem. I don't think it proves there is no meaning to life. Let me give you an illustration. Have you ever just said this? If I just had this, I'd be happy. You ever said that? And then you get it. And you're happy until a new and better thing comes along, and you go, if I get that, I'm going to be happy. If you have that, then if you have those thoughts, maybe greed is a little bit more of a part of you than you think. See, because greed means you'll never really be satisfied with these things, which is why Jesus warned us in Luke chapter 12, verse 15, he says, watch out. Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life doesn't consist in the abundance of his possessions. And that's the moment that you go, that's right. It doesn't. See, life is more than the sum of what you own. But if you are taken over by the sin of greed, greed reduces your life to a collection of things. That's what it does. This is the effect that it has inside of you. This is what Paul said. He put it this way in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 9 and 10. He said, people who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. And he goes on to say in verse 10, for the love of money is a root, not the, but it's a root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with grief. Have you watched this destroy marriages? I have. Have you watched money destroy friendships? I have. I have even in years past been asked to sit down with families when a family member has died and they've asked me to adjudicate me. I'm not doing it. Heads up. All right, this part, I'm not doing it. But I've been asked to sit down and to adjudicate disagreements when a parent has died and they're fighting over the estate to the point that they're no longer interacting with each other. What has happened there? I think we have the answer today, don't we? Greed has consumed them. Greed starts, it's a sin against yourself. Second, greed is a sin against your neighbor or your friend. When my having more of what is unnecessary means that they can't have what is needed, greed has taken me over. Did you hear what I said? when my having more of what is unnecessary, please pay attention to what I'm saying, to what is unnecessary means that they cannot have what is needed because I won't even care enough to provide it. Greed has taken me over. As Americans, we need to consider how our consumption is affecting the world. I'm just going to throw this out there. We are 6% of the world's population, consuming over a third of the world's resources. Just think about it for a second. Most of the stuff that we spend our money on wasn't worth it. And we know it. We know it. 6% of the world's population, we consume over a third of the world's goods. Is something disproportionate here? If you look at 1 John chapter 3, verse 17 and 18, we need to remember this. If anyone has material possessions and sees his brother in need but has no pity on him, how can the love of God be in him? Dear children, let us not love with words or tongue, but actions and truth. Quit talking the good talk and live the good life. So greed is a sin that affects my neighbor. Here's the third. Greed will keep us from God. Take it to the bank. It will keep you from God. Here's why. It's because greed is idolatry. Fundamentally, greed is a worship problem. In Luke 18, it tells the story of the rich young ruler who came to Jesus and he wanted to follow him. You remember the story? And Jesus told him this. It's Luke 18, 22 to 25. You still lack one thing. Sell everything you have, give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come follow me. By the way, there's an order there that's interesting. Get rid of this and then follow me. And when he heard this, he became sad because he was a man of great wealth. And then Jesus looked at him and he said, how hard is it for the rich to enter the kingdom of God? Indeed, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of the needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. Let me be clear. There is nothing in any of these passages that I'm talking about today that says it is sinful to have wealth. Nothing. Sometimes people are wealthy because they had a great idea. They've handled themselves with integrity, and God is blessed. Nothing. I'm asking the other side of it. When has this stuff overtaken your life? That's the question. So what kept this young man from following Jesus? And the answer is greed. It was greed that did it. Given the choice of Jesus or money, he chose the money. And his greed is what kept him from God. Inevitably, it will, because even Jesus said, at the end of the day, you're going to serve one of two masters. It's me or it's money. But it's probably not. It ain't going to be both. Something's going to go. So if that's what's going on with greed, here's the question. What's the cure for it? It's one thing to identify the problem, but it's like when you're sick and you go to the doctor, you're like, and how do we take care of this? I want to make just a few suggestions to you this morning. And they might be a little bit tough for you because it's going to require you to actually change something. And nobody likes change, right? Nobody likes change. But here's the first thing. The cure for greed, number one, is generosity. It's generosity. It's not sitting there and just wishing to not be a greedy person. It's generosity. Be liberal in your giving. The classic virtue that is usually considered the opposite of greed is generosity. To be generous is to be liberal in giving. Perhaps, and this is the thing, perhaps the best way to pry the fingers off of greed is to have a heart that wants to give. It's certainly what Jesus recommended. I'm just going to give you a couple of passages. You scribble these down, and I want you to go think about these this week. In Matthew chapter 5, verse 42, give to the one who asks you. Do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. Now, let me be clear here, because if you're sitting there going, all right, so a drug addict comes up, don't do that. All right, I'm not telling you to facilitate somebody's drug problem or alcohol problem or anything like that. I'm talking about a person with real need. Real need. That's the difference. Give to the one who asks you. Do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. Matthew chapter 6, verses 2 through 4. So when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets. In other words, just give. Don't announce it with trumpets as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets to be honored by men. I tell you the truth, they've received their reward in full. But when you give to the needy, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving is in secret. Then your Father, who sees what is done in secret, he will reward you. Or how about Matthew 19:21? Jesus said, if you want to be perfect, sell your possessions, give to the poor, you will have treasures in heaven. And then he says this, follow me. Follow me. So the first way to overcome greed is with generosity. It's with generosity. Literally creating new habits for your life. Here's the second thing. Some of us need to learn contentment. We're just not there. We have to learn contentment. Be satisfied with what you have. If you look at Hebrews 13:5, it says, keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have, because God has said, never will I leave you and never will I forsake you. Never. It reminded me of this story. There's a rich businessman. He was disturbed to find a fisherman sitting lazily beside his boat. Why aren't you out there fishing? He said. And he said, well, I caught enough fish for the day, the fisherman said. Well, why don't you catch more fish than you need? The rich man said. Well, what would I do with them? And he said, well, you could earn more money and you could buy a better boat so you could go deeper and catch more fish. You could purchase nylon nets, catch even more fish, make more money. Soon you'd have a fleet of boats and be rich like me. And the fisherman said, well, then what would I do? And the businessman said, well, you could sit down and enjoy life. And he said, well, what do you think I'm doing right now? I want to end with a quote from Tim Keller. He said, Jesus gave up all his treasure in heaven in order to make you his treasure. Jesus gave up all his treasure in heaven in order to make you his treasure, because you're a treasured people. And when you see him dying to make you his treasure, when you really see him dying to make you his treasure, that will make him yours. Money will cease to be the currency of your significance and your security. And you'll want to bless others with what you have. To the degree that you grasp the gospel, money will have no control over you. Think on his costly grace until it changes you into a generous people. How much of a hold does greed have on you?